Happy Sunday, everybody! Getting these buttons working, getting the grease off the wheel there, Dave Miranda. See, this is what happens when you go to Mexico.
I know. You just go over there, you take some tequila, and then you
can't function. And that's it. And everything gets rusty while he's gone. Hey, Don, how are you?
How are you, Frank?
I'm doing good.
Tequila does that to an audio board, doesn't it?
When you spill it on the audio board, it doesn't seem to work as good as it used to.
Technical difficulties and the brain.
Yeah, yeah. Good to meet you, Don. This is the first time we're working together. Don
nice
Norton
to
up in the newsroom.
Nice to meet you too, Frank. Yeah, yeah. Lots of buttons around this place, aren't there?
Yeah, and ones I know not of. Thus the beginning of the end. That's why we have Dave here.
When he's how to talk to the newsroom.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, Dave, how do I talk back to Don? I've only been here for 4 years.
Those buttons are over here, and then the other buttons are over here, and it's...
You ever see Anchorman, Don? I'm sure you have,
sure.
Right?
See,
I mean, that's. I just need to focus on one thing. If you give me multitasking things where I got to, like, focus, I'll just start reading a script and go off to the right, and I'll say anything they put in front of me.
That's because you have a creative mind, so you
that's
get
what it is.
Distracted
I'm,
and
thank
you just
Dave.
Start creating stuff. Yeah,
thank you for reminding
defense.
Of that. Yeah, I appreciate that. We got a fun show today. All over the place, actually, but we're going to kick it off with our core, our house, Dave. We're going to be talking universal design for all. You know, with the millennials staying at home and multiple generations and families staying in the same house, and ultimately maybe being passed on to the next generation.
You hit it right on the money, because we were talking in the newsroom about that, and a lot of 30-35 year olds are coming back home now.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I don't know what it is, but good idea. I wish my parents lived local. Take some of that financial burden off. Like, Mom, I'm coming over for dinner tonight. Hey, could you do my laundry, by the way? That was the best.
Mm-hmm.
Never having to do laundry was awesome.
So you have to design for it. You have to cater everybody
yeah.
at home.
And we're talking to Mimi Altman as well as John. I'm going to say it wrong. Maybe not. Oatking, a certified remodeler, universal design certified professional, a street builders out of Western Springs. Also a NARIGC board member. Dan Taddy is joining us. If I butcher the names, I do apologize. Director of Education Certification for the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. And Mimi's going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about this concept of universal design for all. And it's also about anybody could do DIY projects at any age, whether it's somebody with a vision or hearing impairment. Yes, you heard me say that. NARI has programs that will help people get going, swing those hammers, and do it safely. And then we're talking at 2:05 to Katie Lynch. You might have seen or heard about Katie. She's been in the news a lot lately. She has this company called Codeverse. And what they do is teach kids how to program code. So if you're like, you think your kid's a wonder kid, you might want to enroll them into this new program that Katie and her husband put together. They're going to be joining us. And she's the star of our Wonder Woman segment this week. Really excited to have her here, because I think she's doing some pretty amazing things. And the future is technology, as much as we love and hate it, which, frankly speaking, how about that transition, Dave?
Speaking the truth.
2:35, in our new segment we're calling Frankly Speaking, we're talking the dark side of social media. So you got the positive with Katie, and then you got the dark side.
You could have communication, but it also has triggers. It can trigger anything else.
Well, I just, this is a perfect show for the balance of that, because I struggle with it. I think there's such great positives to it. And we're just talking to Jenna, our social media expert here, who's doing all our stuff behind the scenes. Say hi, Jenna. Yeah, and it's a necessary evil on so many points. You know, you have to be out there, especially a celebrity or a talk show host. You got to be putting yourself out there. Although I just read Kanye West pulled all his social media completely down.
Well, maybe
shocking breaking news, right?
Because everything going on with the family, maybe. And social media also helps with bringing groups together. Like, for example, when there's a protest for here, a protest for there. And social media now is a big part of news lately. Whenever.
But there's so much fake stuff, Dave. There's so much
fake news.
Dark side to it. Like, I don't want to scroll down my Facebook, timeline and see a brawl at the mall. I don't want to see, a kid getting jumped in Russia, by three thugs. But it pops up.
Or pet cruelty
or any of those dark side videos. So we're going to talk to somebody from North Shore University, Neely Bean, Ben, I believe, again, you always give me these tongue-twisting names, about how to unplug from the impact of the dark side of social media. And sometimes it takes just literally shutting it down. Put that phone away. I've been doing this at night lately. I don't take my phone into the bedroom. I charge it. I leave it on overnight downstairs. And I've been sleeping so much better. I don't know if it's the radioactive waves coming from the phone not penetrating my brain, or it's just it, I can't reach over and grab it.
It is proven, Frank, that you could sleep better. There's some people that grab their phone and go on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, whatever, because they can't sleep, but it just makes it worse.
It really does, especially if you don't put that the light changes. So the blue light is what keeps you up. They have the iPhone has a filter you could swipe up, and it has a night filter, and if you use it, it changes the screen to a bit yellow-orangey light tone coming out of it, which is a better... I mean, it's not good at all to be on your device because I think it activates your brain, but at least there's some failsafe to it. Now, I will say this. I do have an old iPhone 5 that's completely inactive other than it works like an iPod. Remember the old iPods?
You just use it for Wi-Fi and stuff?
I use it for every night. I meditate before bed, and I have these meditation, you know, downloads, these audio downloads that I use that are like guided meditations. That's the only thing I do at night is I'll pop if I'm having a little trouble falling asleep, I'll pop those in my ear and it puts me right to sleep. So I feel like I'm having some victory.
Sound therapy.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, rounding out the show, Chef Nathan Sears is joining us. You can go up to the rooftop at the Wit and taste his amazing food. They're launching a brand new menu, and it's going to be a nice ending to our show because I think he's bringing some samples in, right, Dave?
Oh, yes. Yummy, yummy to our tummies, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and sorry I wasn't here last year. It was Mother's last week. Well, I was here last year. Last week, I had was up with my wife, and we spent some family time together coming off of everything that she's been going through. And I want to thank you all again for the outpouring of support in my wife's battle with cancer. Things are going pretty good. I think now she had the big surgery, so they removed the entire thyroid out of her body. So that was a big chunk of where the cancer lived. And now we're just dealing with kind of what's left. We don't know yet until she does the second round of testing to see that, fingers crossed. I mean, right now, it's really the emotional and psychological ups and downs that we're dealing with that come along with, being diagnosed with cancer. So
I think if you were not this positive, Frank, and you didn't use this meditation and this therapy that you take, I think you guys would be a lot worse.
I'm not going to lie. It's not easy.
No, I mean,
it certainly helps to be positive and to be the person who has to uplift the family a lot. But she's been amazing. She's been really a big, trooper and, getting on her feet again. But, there's good days and there's a lot of bad days. And, it's just part of what comes with it. But I, believe we're turning a positive corner and, life goes on. We got to keep on trucking.
I'm glad to hear that. There's still that light at the end of the tunnel still.
But I just want to say happy Mother's Day because I wasn't here last week. So happy Mother's Day to all you amazing moms out there.
And to all the mamacitas too.
And the mamacitas that I know not of because I am married. A little bit of good news. Next week, we're having the folks from the LaGrange Pep Parade on, and I'm excited to announce, put a smile on my wife's face. We're going to be the, what do they call? The Grand...
Marshals?
Padrones, yes. The Grand Marshals of the LaGrange Pep Parade, which is kind of an iconic thing. It's huge. It's been in LaGrange for decades. Very, very popular. Thousands of people come out. And we're going to have the folks from the LaGrange Pep Parade on with us next week to talk about it.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. Perfect. The starting of the Memorial Day weekend. They say that's the start of summer, the unofficial start of summer, right?
It is. So I'd like to see it. This weather isn't convincing me. I don't like it. And then finally, the Wish Ball was last night. I don't know if you heard about this. The Make-A-Wish Foundation puts on this big ball at Navy Pier. I was just, my neighbor Megan and Dave were, Megan works for Make-A-Wish, and she was telling me all about it. Guess who was the MC?
Who?
Wasn't me.
I have no idea.
It was someone who looks similar to me, John Stamos. You like how I threw that little slide compliment for myself in there? Yeah, John Stamos was in town last night. I don't know if anybody went to the event, but I heard it was a smash, and John Stamos was super nice. I wasn't there, but I'm getting this firsthand from Megan, who pretty much put the event together with Make-A-Wish. And she said he was so nice and so courteous, and they did a performance, they had music, and he stayed around and hung out with the crowd, took pictures. That's really nice, because I still watch Full House, I'll admit it. I do watch the newer version, Fuller House, as well.
I saw a couple episodes of that on Netflix.
My kids are into it. Like, I watched this stuff growing up, and I was always who wasn't a fan of John Stamos? I had a guy crush on him. I mean, I'm okay admitting that. And there's lots of girls who had a lot of girl crushes on him. And Megan said, I said, Megan, what does he really look like in person? And she said, Frank, I don't know, but he just never ages. He never ages. He looks exactly like he does, on the shows.
Did he still have the cool hair?
He still has cool hair. I gotta love it. God bless him. He's got to dye his hair, though. I mean, come on. Right, what is he, 50 something?
You know what? Yeah, because it's too black, right? It's too dark.
I don't know if it's... Hey, listen. It's never too black. You know what I mean? Like, I will keep my hair looking as I don't dye my hair, but my hair is naturally black.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth. I don't dye it. Maybe it's all the healthy
food. Yeah, but when you dye it, it would look so black.
Jet
it looked
black.
Almost blue.
Yeah. You don't want to do that. But kudos to John Stamos for coming and supporting the Make-A-Wish and hanging out and being a real dude. I like to hear stories of celebrities being real dudes.
Especially for Make-A-Wish.
Yeah. I've good cause.
Seen a lot of good things they do.
Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show here on WGN Radio 720 in Chicago. Welcoming to the show the folks from the National Association of the Remodeling Industry's Greater Chicagoland Chapter. We have Mimi Altman, Joe Etking, and Dan Tatey. Taddy, welcome to the show, folks. Appreciate you coming on. Did I get that wrong? Taddy?
Taddy.
Was it Taddy? All right, that was close. I usually butcher it way worse than that. Dan, thanks for coming to the show. John, Mimi, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Frank. Thanks
so what are we're talking about this concept of universal design for all. Explain to me, A, what that is, and then B, how does the NARIGC, is that right?
Yes.
Work? Like, how do you guys work together to accomplish that goal?
So,
who wants to lead
me,
here?
It's, you know, talking to homeowners. One thing I'll say is the homeowner usually is not aware of universal design. But once you bring up to them the features of it, they buy right into it.
So what are the features of universal design?
Well, I guess the key is trying to make the space that they're living in adaptable to all ages.
Okay.
And if you're talking to someone who is an older homeowner, they're probably already thinking about what I can do to my house, whether it's, you know, wider doors, levers versus knobs, all those kind of things. But you're also seeing the younger homeowners now who have parents who are getting that age. So even though they may not need it, they realize that their living, you know, family members are getting there.
So how about if you have multiple generations living in one roof?
It's sometimes called the sandwich generation.
The sandwich generation,
right,
yes.
Where you have parents, young children, and the owners, if you will. And that's a challenge. I mean, that's where John, when he looks at that whole setup, is trying to build that project so all of those people can exist in there and be optimized.
So who trumps all in that situation?
Decision maker?
The one paying? The one paying or the one needing the special assistance?
Most of the stuff doesn't cost more. It just matter what you do to the space. Again, whether you buy a lever versus a knob, the cost is the same. So it's just a matter of introducing them to the benefits and then
sure.
There really isn't. A few cases there are additional costs, but
yeah, I would think handicap impaired or wheelchair
right.
accessible. You're talking about different
yeah.
needs,
but it could be just like moving down the switch level.
Yeah,
doesn't cost me if we're putting one in. What do we put at 48 or 42? No extra cost. So it's just thinking ahead for what might be useful down the road.
So what's protocol? You say I'm the client, all right, and I walk in and I'm like, John, you know, I got these issues here. I got like a 5-year-old, a 12-year-old. I got my 70-year-old grandmother, my mother living with me. And I want to make it stylish and functional at the same time. What materials are you going to suggest? Like, kind of walk me through your protocol.
Well, so if I'm doing a bathroom,
yeah.
What I would suggest to them is, okay, you're healthy now, but at some point, walking over that 2-3-inch curb could become troublesome. Let's do a zero-depth
transition
threshold.
Yeah.
I mentioned to Dan and Mimi, when I do a shower, even though I may not need grab bars now, I put plywood behind the tile, so down the road, if they ever get to a point where they need that grab bar, they have the entire 5-foot section where they can throw a grab bar on. So just, again, it's more just planning versus the cost.
Right. And these are for existing homes typically, right? And you're
Yeah, most of mine is actually remodeling, which is existing space, just fixing it up. Additions are much easier because then you can really have the full gamut. You
right.
can do the wider door, the zero thresholds. When you're working with a remodeling project, you're somewhat limited as far as your options.
And you bring up a good point about, a lot of people won't think about the idea that, yeah, I'll put a grab bar up, but they won't realize that even drilling through the tile into the hardy backer or whatever's back there, you still need additional support because with a good yank on that, with somebody who weighs 150 and over, there's a chance that's going to come out of the wall after 4 or 5 pulls, right?
Oh, definitely.
So these are the things that you guys as the experts think about is I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right.
Right.
And put that 2x4 behind there.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. And then as far as like kitchens, you know, what are we looking out for when we're talking about multi-generational families? Is there some trends here that we would want to look towards?
I think what you want to look at is maybe variable height countertops so that the younger generation can work in there and help along with the preparing. and probably touch either touch faucets or lever faucets on most things. So if as the older people come in, they can move that without having a lot of stress on their hands, and even the younger kids can move the faucets and whatnot. You may think about the height of the cabinets, the upper cabinets. You may want to adjust those if you have to bring those into to range of the younger generation. Oh, John, any other items that you might want to put in there?
No, I think a lot of the stuff's already happened. It used to be, you'd want to get a printout, a readout versus a dial. But almost all your electronics have a digital readout. So some of the stuff is just over time has made it easier for the multi-generational households.
I like the no-touch deal. I have a no-touch toilet in my house, and I like what it does to the guests that come over. I freak them out all the time because they'll go to the bathroom, and I won't say anything. And they'll be like in there for 10 minutes. And I'm like, God, are you okay? And they'll be kind of embarrassed, and then ultimately they'll come out and ask, like, where is your handle to flush the toilet? It's the best. So if you ever want to prank somebody, install one of these touchless toilets. For those who are not familiar with the show, we do a tequila drinking game every time I screw a name up. Dave, pull out the tequila. You know, we do need a tequila sponsor for the show. Can you work on that?
So every time you butcher a name, you're going to get a tequila shot?
Yeah.
So you could pronounce it better?
Right. And it'll get better the more shots I take.
So it's called tongue therapy.
Tongue therapy, yes.
Okay.
It gets better. And by the way, folks, we'll open up the phone lines if you have any questions for our contracting experts, our board of amazing minds here, who focusing right now on a topic that's really poignant, universal design. Now, Mimi, explain to us exactly what all that means.
All right. Well, we've been talking about universal design and how it relates to aging, where you have different generations. But there are also other situations where it works, where if you have someone who doesn't really have any other limitations other than arthritis in their hands, and they were talking about doing grab bars or pulls instead of knobs, where you're not having to grab something, or where you have a toddler or a little baby who's transitioning to walking, making it a safe environment and an easy environment for that.
No sharp corners.
Exactly. But it's also about the flooring materials that are used to make it easy. And I think Dan's going to talk about some of the general principles. But, someone who has visual impairments, like me, as of Thursday, I have to wear readers for practically everything. So something like that, a remodeler can incorporate that type of limitation into the design. And as I said before, a lot of the times it's really not a price change.
Interesting. Dan, tell me about the principles.
Okay, there are seven principles for universal design. So it starts off with equitable use. And that's basically, it's marketable to anyone. As we said, it's affordable. It doesn't really cost any more to do. Flexibility in use. So whatever the product is, it has great flexibility. It can be used by anyone with any type of ability or disability. Simple and intuitive. I look at it. I know how to use it. I don't have to have a five-page instruction manual to use it. I know how it's supposed to work. Like that touch toilet, you need a manual with a little sign on it.
You wave over the right side of the tank. It's fascinating. But the first time people do it, they're in love with it. Then they want to know where to get one. Right. It's great technology.
The fourth one is perceptible information. So I can look at it, and I can see how it's supposed to work and what it's supposed to do. A tolerance for error. So if someone doesn't use it the way it's supposed to be used, it's not going to break or it's not going to do something and
shut
injure
down,
anyone.
Right?
Yeah. It's built so that it doesn't
break. And what in specific are you kind of referencing when you're saying like something that doesn't shut down or doesn't break?
So cabinets that have opening and when you shut them, that may shut themselves might be useful for that. Maybe an auto-raising cabinet or countertop where I pushed a button and it raises to a set level.
They have those?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Now that does cost more money.
Yeah, a few more dollars for that.
Yeah.
The next one is low physical effort. So it doesn't take a lot of effort to use the product if you have to do something with it. And size and space for approach. So a lot of times when we build out a restroom, a bathroom, we want to make sure that it has adequate space to approach the toilet, adequate space to get into the shower or bathtub. So those are all things that come into mind when we put something like that together. It has to really fit. So some of these, this is universal design is applied universally to any kind of product. So you get a cabinet that you buy at IKEA, and you get an instruction manual, put that together. That is built with these things in mind.
And then three days later, once you assemble it, you can actually
different kind of problem. But So that's one way of applying it. So our remodelers really focus on the home and how they can make this home accessible for anyone, regardless of their size, physical abilities. Just make it work for anyone who walks into that space.
So what about a tight space? Let's talk about the you know, if you're remodeling, you're not building from scratch. I'm saying to you, here's a 5x5 bathroom, but make it, you know, universally design friendly. It's a challenge, right?
It's a challenge to the point of almost being impossible. I was talking to a homeowner who's losing use of his leg, so it's a matter of time before he's in a wheelchair, and he wanted to modify his bathroom. And it was about the same size you talk about, 5x5, and we can put the zero threshold shower in there. We can put levers on the door. We can't meet the requirements for the wheelchair. So That's where you're – in this case, we actually talked about knocking a wall down.
I was going to say, do you guys make those further suggestions at that point to say, hey, this is your kitchen space, You know, can give a little? Are you willing to lose, 5 feet of your kitchen to gain accessibility to the bathroom?
You almost have to. Again, addition is a different story where you're building from scratch, but remodeling where you're working within an existing footprint, you almost have to suggest stealing some space from a room that is adjacent.
Yeah.
And more often than not, depending how close they are to actually needing it, the more likely they're willing to forego that.
And do you have to forego style when it comes to universal design?
Not at all.
Because you don't see, you would think, all right, it's more about the use, it's more about the functionality.
Right.
Do people care as much as wanting the best tile and the best cabinetry? And
well, I think you can get all that. I mean, again, you don't have to sacrifice anything with universal design. Again, it's more about the planning. You know, it's just what you use, not you have to give this up for that. I have not experienced anything where I had to say, hey, this would be good for you, but...
One of the principles we talk about and teach in our class is universal design should not look medicinal. Mm-hmm. It should look beautiful.
Yes.
And that's what we talk to our designers about.
It shouldn't be a hospital.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a hospital.
Right. But it used to be, though. Like people, when they made, let's call it, friendly environments in the home, it wasn't always like, oh, I'm going to make this look beautiful. It was, I'm going to make it functional. I'm going to make it fit for this patient, so to speak, but not the homeowner.
There is a difference, though, between universal design and handicap accessibility.
Sure.
When you get to the handicap stage, then you have to forego some of the appearance. But universal design is different. And again, I can't think of anything where you have to sacrifice appearance.
And the manufacturers have really come a long way in designing functional items that work with universal design. For instance, towel bars. They have some towel bars now that are structured as grab bars. So it just looks like a towel bar instead of a grab bar like you'd see in a hospital or something.
I like
that.
To hear that. And yeah. We're taking your calls too, folks. 312-981-7200 if you have questions for our board here. Let's get our first call right now. Let's talk to Anna. Hey, Anna, how are you?
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling the Frank Fontana Show.
Very, very interesting and helpful.
Well, thank you.
A four bedroom home, brick home, very top condition. Would you advise converting one bedroom into a very substantial laundry room to avoid older people having to go up and down steps to the basement?
John, you want to take that?
Yeah, definitely. Again, a four bedroom seems like you got plenty of bedroom space, and having that laundry on the first floor. Almost any, again, this is goes beyond just older. Everyone wants that now. Even the younger people want
it. My wife
that.
Wants it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I would definitely suggest that. And you probably wouldn't have to lose the whole room. A laundry room probably only has to be 5x8, something like that. So maybe you steal some of the space and still make it into a den or whatever's left over. So definitely would consider that.
And does that increase Anna's value on the home?
I think it's going to be. I think, again, because we're all getting older and we're thinking about this now, I know there are people looking at, hey, I want to do this in my house to increase the value. So I think it will. I mean, the population is getting smarter.
That's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Anna. Thanks for calling the
show.
I appreciate it. Yeah, so guys, if you have some more questions, 312-981-7200 is our number here. We have our panel from NARI, Mimi, John, and Dan, who are here to answer your questions. And we're talking about the idea of universal design for all. And you guys actually teach this, right? And,
yes.
And so tell us about NARI and the purposes that you guys serve the building community.
So on the universal design side, we have an 8-hour class that we run our remodelers through and designers through. It talks about these principles. We give them some construction, how to make these the zero threshold shower implementations, how to look at electrical and make sure we do the right kind of modifications for electrical. Also some technology improvements that can go in to help the people within the house access the front door, and there's a lot of cameras out there now that you can put in to monitor who's who and let people in.
Nest makes
remotely.
A nice one that comes on the front door, yeah. And you can see the people through your iPhone.
You have an app, and you can push the button and open the front door. And so that helps people who have limited mobility really interact with the world. And so we talk about a lot of those sayings, and then we have a pretty tough exam that they have to pass in order to get our designation for that.
And they get a certificate after that?
They get a certificate, they get a designation, they have to renew it annually.
Is it recognized by the state at all?
Not so much by the state. We try to stay away from any type of that, because then they're going to tell us what they want us to do.
Got it.
We try to work professionals, people like John and others who are out there in the field that are looking to see what's happening right now. What do we need to? How do we adjust the program to meet with the needs of our consumers, of our clients, your listeners? How do we teach them what they need to have today to make that happen?
All right, we opened up our phone lines 312-981-7200 to answer your calls about either Universal Design or any of your construction questions. John is the owner of A Street Builders out in Western Springs, services the Chicagoland area, but mostly focused in southwest suburbs. Dan is the director of education at NARI, and Mimi's just the boss. She's boss lady. She likes that. She, there was no argument there. It was just the boss.
You got it right.
Can we record that, and then I can just
Oh, this is recorded, sweetie.
Put it on my...
Yeah, this is podcast. You can carry that podcast on your phone. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's take our first call here. Linda's been holding on. Hey, Linda, thanks for calling the Frank Fontana Show. What's your question? All right, let's go to Marge then. Let's see if the phone's working. Hey, Marge.
Hello.
Hey, see, it is working. So, Linda, call back if you're listening, because for some reason we couldn't hold you. Maybe she had us on hold, Dave. Marge, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. What's your question for our team of NARI experts?
Okay, I have a question. I'm going to try to keep it simple and less complicated to try to describe. My husband and I, we had built a home in 2005. We are in one of the suburbs, and like most people my age, middle 50s, when we had our home built, we went with the features for our bathrooms of the soaking tub, you know, tub that's three-sided that would go into a corner that you would step into, and it's got, you know, the sauna jets in it. And the only way to get in there is to step in and basically hold on to the arched larger faucet, almost like the waterfall faucet.
Nice.
So as I'm getting older, I'm holding on to that. My husband said, you know, when you get in there, you're literally like almost pulling that thing out, you know, after use. So I'm at an age right now where I still like to enjoy going in there, you know, especially after being on my feet all day, even if I just want to soak my feet. But I don't know what to do as far as handle-wise. I have towel bars on each side of the wall, but, you know, obviously that would come right out. So any ideas?
I got an idea for you, Marge. Yank on that faucet so hard that it rips itself out of the tub, thus forcing your husband to get you a brand new tub.
Uh-huh.
And you're winning all the way around, trust me. Just make sure the plumbing is off. You turn that water spout off so it doesn't
shoot. I know, right, exactly. Well, I didn't realize I was doing that until, like I said, one day he's looking at it, he goes, it's about a quarter of an inch out of the circle. And I'm like, oh, I hold on to it when I get in and out. You know?
I was going to say, you're probably real close to sprouting a leak there.
Yes.
At some point. But I kid. Let's talk to John and Dan and Mimi about what could be done here. John, what do you say?
I'm at a loss. I hate to tell you that. I kind of like Frank's idea, but...
I'm telling you, it's not... I kid, but I'm not kidding.
Is this a freestanding tub with the claw feet and all that?
Well,
is it a freestanding wall?
It's actually, you know what it is, and I've seen this in a million homes, especially probably the last 10 years of homes built. It's a corner. It's tiled in. And it's actually it's three-sided fiberglass tub, but the way that it's cornered in is that, you know, it's got a flat, straight front, and then it kind of goes, like, side to side a little angle.
So it's probably...
So when you're getting in, from your, actually, like, I'm standing right now at it, I'm getting in looking at my corner wall where it's in. If that makes sense.
Wait, hold on. I think, Dan, did you say you have one of those?
Yeah, I have one of those. I'd like to get rid of it.
So, Dan, you could use my idea if you want. Just yank the faucet.
And I know a lot of the newer homes within the last 10 years, I mean, that was the way to go, you know, because, let's get a soaking tub.
I remember it was big in the 90s.
I'll tell you, I've taken out four or five and never put one in.
Me too.
Really?
We usually convert them to shower space.
Oh, my God, that would be a good idea. That's not a bad idea. Because I have the same thing, a little shower stall that you could barely even turn around in, you know.
That's you know what? John has it right. You know, like, get if you don't necessarily, but you did say you like to soak in it still, so
yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But what about those little, you should see those commercials with the one with the door? Like, they have, like, a door on them? You could do one of those jobbers, you know? Like,
yeah, that's true.
If you want to go that direction. But it reminds me of somebody who actually really needs one. Or you can have a little slide that you climb up and slip right into that tub. Have some fun with it. But, no, I like, you know, all kidding aside, John's idea of converting that into a corner shower with some nice glass going across, opens up the space. It'll update and create value for your home, Marge. You know, those old tubs, unfortunately, you might love them still, but buyers don't. They see that and go, geez, they're doing what you're doing, going, how do I get rid of this thing?
Well, my half the time is, how do I get in the thing? You know, I'm like, hi, you know, all the time I'm going to go to get in there, and I'm like, well, do I take a chance and hold onto the wall and flip? You know, so it's kind of like one of those, you know, like, as I get older, I'm like, well, eventually, well, I'm not going to be using it because, you know, it's just not very safe, you know. But that was, like, my question. And the other thing, I don't know, are you able to put, you know, like you were talking about the handles for people, you know, to grab onto. Are you able to put those in this type of material, which is kind of like a, formica or whatever this is? You know,
is it a fiberglass surround?
Fiberglass, yes, yeah.
No, you got a real problem because you got to find something of substance and.
Well, typically, it should be a 2x4 frame covered with hardy board or something behind
cement
it.
Cement board.
Probably not the strongest. Maybe on the sidewalls as you're coming in? Are you close to a wall that you could grab onto?
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Suburb are you located in?
I'm actually I'm in Seneca near Morris. So I'm kind of out here.
Go to your plumbing supply house, not one of the big box stores.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of suppliers that have grab bars that can go into existing walls and not have to, you know, attach to a stud. But the fiberglass concerns me in general.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
All right, Marge.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. You helped a lot.
You got it. Thanks for calling.
Have a great day.
All right. We're going to take one more call. This is Susan. Hey, Susan. Thanks for calling the Frank Fontana Show. What's up?
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Frank. I'm good, Frank. I first met you when you first moved into the Chicago area. You spoke at a local women's club luncheon, and I'm glad you stayed here. I'm really proud of your success.
Why, thank you, great. Susan. You're giving me chills. I appreciate it. I remember that luncheon up in Oak Brook, correct?
Yes, yes. I even have the brochure that you were the guest speaker, and you were very, very encouraging and entertaining, and we had a lot of information. I'm glad you're here.
That's so sweet. I appreciate that. Can we? You're looking for something in terms of a custom design fridge?
Yeah. Okay. So I have a condo in the city, and I have an old refrigerator, and I cannot put water into it. It can't be, you know, there can't be anything fancy. I just want a basic refrigerator. Right now, that refrigerator has a freezer with a bottle of frozen vodka, and then there's wine in the refrigerator, and maybe some staples and leftovers. And that's kind of all the food I need to have in the city, because the city, you can go out every day and eat something.
Absolutely.
You don't have to pay. So I have to replace this refrigerator, and everything is big and, you know, fancy, and I'd really like to have something that would be half that you could turn off just for storage, or have it open. You can turn it on when the refrigerator, when you're having a party, and the top of it could be the refrigerator. Is there such an animal?
Guys, do you have? We have like a 30 seconds left to answer Susan's question. Anybody got any good answers?
I don't have any ideas, but again, I'm sure if you go to one of those larger appliance stores, you'll have all sorts of options.
I would give ABT a call. They typically have, you know, or Grant or any of these, you know, that really specializes in that. You know, Susan, shoot me an email, though, at frank@frankfontana.net. Give me the measurements, and I'll do some research for you. How about that?
Okay, at .net. Okay,
.net.
I can do this.
You're the best, Susan. Thanks so much for the call. You made my day.
Okay, bye.
Appreciate it. All right, that does it for our guests. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Mimi, where can people find more information about NARI?
If you're in the Chicago area, narichicago.org. And that's NARI. Or if you're outside of Chicago, nari.org.
And A Street, where can people find more information about you guys?
AStreetBuilders.com.
AStreetBuilders.com. Guys, thank you so much. Appreciate it. It's been fantastic. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show, and it's time for our most favorite segment, Wonder Woman. This is where we focus on amazing women in the Chicagoland area doing amazing things, breaking ground, and motivating others to do the same. Today's Wonder Woman is a really special guest, Katie Lynch. She is the co-founder and CMO of Codeverse. You might have known her as Social Katie many years ago, an entrepreneur in the tech world. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Katie, we were just talking about your life outside of all of the insanity, you know, as this entrepreneur, and getting to know you a little bit more. Tell us how you got started in business. Then we'll get to Codeverse and all that. Like, you come from where?
I'm from Edinburgh, Scotland. Yep. And I moved to Chicago 10 years ago. In fact, 10 years ago this month.
You're kidding.
Yep.
Well, welcome again, I guess. Yeah, like, or happy anniversary.
I know. Thank you. You know, and it's been, I love Chicago. You know, it's home for me.
Yeah. And why is that? Why do you feel like home here in Chicago?
I mean, a lot of different reasons. I mean, first and foremost, the people. Like, they're so friendly. They're so supportive, especially within the tech community. You know, it's a beautiful city. The architecture is great. It's easy to get to. Right. Yeah. It's like it's a hub, so it's easy to fly anywhere.
And it's becoming here. The tech hub. I mean, I'm reading a lot about this, where all these major tech companies are moving here. I'm friends with Howard Tolman over at 1871. I don't know if I'm sure you've been in there and know what that's all about.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's definitely become an incubator type of place, Chicago.
It has. And I'd say, you know, a lot of that innovation has really happened over the past like 7 or 8 years since like the Groupons and the Grubhubs really exploded, you know.
Yeah, now you got Google's coming. I mean, we've got these huge companies coming here. But you stand out and you know, for many different reasons. You're a woman in this, you know, tech world, you know, driven by mostly men, let's just face it. And you've done phenomenally well for yourself. What motivates you? I mean, let's talk about it. Like, what made you say, I'm going to do this? I'm going to be this person?
Yeah, I mean, so, and to kind of go back to your first question about, like, how did you even get into business? So, you know, moved here on my own from the UK. And when I first came here, I worked for a travel startup that was based in Bucktown. And interestingly, that was owned by my now husband, Craig Elliott. And so when I joined that startup, my role was very broad but vague. It was just managing all marketing initiatives for this company. And so I did that. Everything from social media, email, like blogging, advertising, you name it. Did it all.
Sounds like a lot for one person.
and it was. But the reality is, like, at a startup, that's just kind of how it is, right? Like, you're scrappy. You just kind of have to figure out things on your own. And really what happened was there was only like 9 people as part of the company. And even though I started out doing marketing, I had to quickly pivot and do sales or work on other areas of the business. And so kind of the more that I kind of threw myself in the deep end, threw myself into learning every single aspect of the business, whether it was the tech, the product, sales, PR, marketing, operations, the more I kind of came to the realization, wow, like, I could do this. Like, I could start my own business in the future, because now I'm well equipped with all the skills and I understand really what it takes to run a company.
Sure.
And so what ended up happening was that travel company, it was called Where I've Been, that travel company sold to TripAdvisor in 2010. And I, at that point, I'd built up all the skills that I needed to really do my own thing. And I did a lot of research on agencies here in Chicago, like big PR agencies and advertising agencies. And one thing that I noticed, it was a common thread across every agency. One thing I noticed in my research was that there was no kind of pure play social media marketing agency out there. And so given my expertise and given my background and experience at this travel business, I said to myself, right, I'm going to be that person, that entrepreneur that starts this
agency. You saw the future.
I saw the future. And so that's what I did. And so when the acquisition went through with TripAdvisor, I spun off. And I started Social Katie, and I ended up running that for about 4.5 years.
Wow. And Social Katie became a huge success.
It did. Yeah, it did. And, you know, I attribute a lot of that success to doing very well at one thing. I mean, social media management services was literally all we offered. And we had tons of big brands, like Fortune 500 brands, coming to us saying, can you build a website? Can you do X? Can you do Y? Can you do Z? And we very much, as a team, put our foot down and we're like, nope, we just do one thing. This is our bread and butter, and we do it well.
That's a tough decision to make in a world that's all about multitasking and utilizing every ounce of every employee to do everything. Like you said, you were doing before for your trip company.
Yeah.
So were you scared at a certain point to say, I'm turning away so much money and so much business? And
no. Honestly, no. And the reason why was because when I started Social Katie, the end game of the business was always to sell it. The end game was to always merge this company into a much larger agency that required our services.
So what makes you tick, though? Come on, let's
yeah.
I get the business stuff, but you know, there's so many people have great ideas out there, and so many, you know, people who are like, I think I got the chutzpah, I think I could do it.
Yeah.
What makes you different from that other person sitting on the other side of this, you know, microphone, listening to this, going, gosh, how did Katie do it?
Yes. You know, to be completely candid, ideas are cheap. Right? It's all about execution at the end of the day. It's all about rolling up your sleeves and hustling and getting it done, right? And when I look at myself and I look at like everything that I've done in my career, like whether I've made mistakes or whether I've had successes, I've always kept pushing. I've always kept going. And I've just had to kind of figure out things on my own.
What obstacles did you face along the way that you might have at some point go, I don't know. Like, I don't know if this is the right thing. Did you ever once question what you were doing?
Honestly, no. I mean, like every entrepreneur faces obstacles and challenges. Like almost every single day, there's something that comes up. And I'd say some of the biggest challenges that I faced when I first launched Social Katie was around hiring, right? Because at the end of the day, Social Katie was my baby. I am the most passionate about my thing. And being able to kind of hand over that or trust.
Are you a micro, like a micromanager of yourself? Like, and it, like, you know what I mean by that? Like, is it, because I have a hard time passing the baton too, or it's like, I know what I could do, but if I give this to somebody, you know, are they going to do it right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not a micromanager of other people, but yeah, I am very meticulous about, you know, who I bring on, what is their energy like? Are they hustlers? You know, are they as passionate about the mission and vision and values of the brand that I am? And, you know, to be completely candid, like I made a lot of mistakes in that area very early on.
How old were you when you started this?
I'm 24, 25.
Literally by yourself? Kind of like this was your initiative. Nobody behind you pushing or funding or, I mean, because there's so many layers to this that way. I don't know if you have enough time to even get through it. What is the Katie's it factor that made her one of the most successful tech entrepreneurs and being a woman in an industry driven by males? Katie, what would you say is your it thing? Like, what made you different and made you persevere through probably, you know, some of the toughest times?
Yeah. I mean, I think it all boils down to being curious, right? Being intellectually curious. I mean, I look back at my time at where I've been, and although I loved my role, I always wanted to keep learning. And I did that. I threw myself in the deep end. I rolled up my sleeves. And I learned every single facet of the business so that I could then go on and start my own company.
And you weren't afraid of losing money. You weren't afraid of losing time in your life. And I mean, as a young 20-something-year-old, like you're trading days and nights on the beach and going out to the clubs for sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're so passionate about something, like me sitting on the beach wasn't something that I wanted to do. Like I wanted to build my own company eventually. And so I had to say to myself, okay, what skills do I have today and what skills do I need to learn and what do I need to do? Who do I need to meet to be able to start something new?
Yeah.
And to answer your question, I mean, the one thing that you learn about being an entrepreneur is you have to take risks. And especially when you're young, you know, when you don't have these major responsibilities.
So if you were to pass on the one nugget of entrepreneurial information, what would that nugget be?
It would be trust your gut. Your intuition is everything. Take more risks and always keep learning. Challenge everything.
I love it. And speaking of learning, you've taken that to the extreme here with your new company, Codeverse. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So Codeverse, I'm so excited about this. We just launched it in April of this year. We are essentially the world's first fully interactive coding studio and educational platform for kids aged 6 to 12 years old.
My son's turning 6.
Yes.
In August. He's in. tell us about it. Amazing. How do you get enrolled? What are they going to learn?
Yeah. So basically, we are launching our first location in Lincoln Park this July. We plan on launching 3 or 4 more locations throughout Illinois over the next 18 months, 2 years. And the goal is, ultimately, our mission is to teach 1 billion kids to code. And so what we're doing is we're building out these beautiful, state-of-the-art interactive studios where kids are learning the basics of coding as well as how to build apps and games using a real programming language that we have built called KidScript.
For those listening who don't know what code is, just in case, what is code?
I mean, the simplest way that I can, it's very complicated, but the simplest way that I can describe it is coding is being able to use a language to tell a computer what to do.
Okay.
And so we are essentially teaching kids to use this language that we've created to be able to build essentially anything that they want, whether it's the next Facebook, next Uber, website, whatever it is that they want to do.
Is it only for kids?
It is only for kids.
Dang. Yeah. So want to learn. Well, that's great. Are you thinking about like the suburbs at all for any of these schools? Or are you going to keep them in the big cities?
Yeah, so we are looking at Deerfield, Skokie, and Naperville, as well as some other areas in the North Shore, right? But the goal ultimately is to expand nationally and globally.
Will you franchise these ultimately, or will you keep them all as a corporate-owned entity?
We'll keep them all. Yeah.
For your fear of somebody not taking your brain process and your methods and kind of doing it their way, right? You want to keep it exactly the way you created, just the way you created Social Katie.
Well, yes.
I see the theme that you have going on here.
I think like what we've built is so incredibly unique. And to tell you a little bit more about the studio that's opening in July.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking about the classroom of the future. Like Codeverse, when you walk into it, there's going to be dozens upon dozens of tech gadgets in there. We've got 3D printers, drones, laser cutters, a 20-foot TV wall, like concert lights, concert speakers. And the really unique thing about this is that kids can use our programming language, KidScript, to be able to program any of those objects within the studio.
Fascinating.
And this is something that is incredibly unique. It's never been done before. And so that is why we want to maintain control over the brand.
Makes sense. I mean, and people think, you know, when I think code, I'm thinking the old school, like, you know, green Mac screen, and you're seeing like...
Most people do.
They do. And it's like the association you get with it. But when you put it in that language of it being able to speak to a 3D printer or speak to your iPhone or speak to a device... That's really the future of coding, correct?
It is.
Or the now of coding.
It is. And this is so important for children, especially to learn now, right? Because kids are growing up in the digital age. They're growing up in a world with Facebook and Uber and all these amazing things. And when you think about the jobs of the future, every single industry is going to be disrupted by technology. So it's why coding is such a valuable skill to know.
Jen, our social media pioneer here, our expert, had a great question before the show. She said, you know, maybe we should ask Katie about, like, what do you think statistically is going to be the amount of jobs that are going to be based around coding in the future? And is this why you're kind of predicting the future once again?
I would say almost every job. Right. Because whether a child grows up and becomes an engineer or whether a child grows up and becomes, let's just say, a musician or an artist, learning that vital skill of coding is a huge asset. Right. Because if you think about a musician, they can build their own website with that skill of coding. They can use that to be able to perfect like music videos and launch those on the web.
Right? Do you think they traditional schools will ultimately pick up your program?
Yes. Yeah, and that is a big goal of ours is over the next couple of years, we'll take our SaaS, so we'll take KidScript, and we want to push that into nonprofits and into schools.
Brilliant. Jenna, does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Is Jenna too old to take any of your classes? What are the ranges?
Yep, so it's 6 to 12-year-olds.
6 to 12.
Yeah, as long as they know how to read and how to write and they know like how to type, then they can take our courses. 6 to 12.
Yeah, I think I need another year for my son. We'll get him there, though. I love this. This is amazingly creative, Katie. I could see another hit on your resume here.
Thank you.
What's next after that? Have you already plotted that? Or is this, because your husband and you call this the legacy company for you.
We do.
This is going to be what's going to make your marker in history.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. It all goes back to our mission, which is to teach 1 billion kids to code. And that is not something that can be done overnight. I mean, Craig and I plan on doing this for the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I could see the passion when you speak about it.
Thank you.
It's very authentic and very real. Where could people find out more information about Codeverse?
Yep, so they can find it out at codeverse.com. and you'll see we have a monthly membership for $225 a month, which essentially gets kids reoccurring access into the beautiful studio, as well as access to KidScript at home. And then we also have summer camps as well.
There's a home program? Like you could do this via your home if you needed to? Or
for right now, for children that do have access to the membership, yes. They can use it at home. Otherwise, SAS, will be launching 2018-2019.
It's fantastic. And where can people find you on social media?
Twitter, at the Katie Lynch is my handle, and it's the same on Instagram as well.
And this is it for you? You're not going to consult? You're not, like, you're putting everything into Codeverse?
Everything. Everything into Codeverse, yep.
Wow. Awesome. Very, very empowering story. I hope Katie's story helped, you know, a lot of women out there, you know, who aspire to be the next Wonder Woman. Take the chances, go for it, and take some great advice from an entrepreneur who's done it all. Co-founder and CMO of Codeverse, Katie Lynch, thank you so much for coming on the show.
The Frank Fontana Show.
I am not afraid to speak frankly.
It's life improvement.
Frankly, this means honestly.
The Frank Fontana Show.
You want to know why? Because I'm frankly speaking.
That's right. It's time for our Frankly Speaking segment. And this week's feature is all about the dark side of the internet and how it impacts all of us on a day-to-day basis, our moods, our feelings, whether we're happy or depressed. It seems that social media seems to be the either the catalyst, the beginning and the end to it all these days. Joining us to talk about the topic from the North Shore University clinical psychologist, Neely Benn. Hey, Neely, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for joining me. It's a great topic. And it's obviously one that's very timely. So many people are just affected by social media, and one minute it's great, and the next minute, you know, I get one half of the room says, "Oh, it's great because we bring all these groups together and people connect," but on the other hand, it's not. It's disconnecting. It's creating, you know, a false world, so to, that I call it, where it's like, you know, I say this to my wife all the time. I'm like, you know, you could look at somebody's a celebrity's, you know, Instagram feed and go crazy because, you know, they're on a beach in Maui and then they're taking their private jet to Tahiti and then they're going, you know, it's like, what's real, what's not, and should we buy into all this?
Those are very curated moments. It's important to remind ourselves of that because we're comparing ourselves to that, and most likely they're not authentic. It's very suspect to wonder what's really true and what isn't.
And who's really posting and who's not posting.
Right.
And, like, you know, I always say to my wife, like, you really think, like, you know, Khloe Kardashian is posting every single, and it's not produced, and it's not, I mean, she knows, obviously, but
of course it is.
It all is.
Yes.
When it comes to celebrities, but, like, how about for the, you know, the person or the kids of today that are aspiring to be these people?
It's turning into that. And that's what's really frightening, is that we're creating these moments that are to emulate these celebrities and this lavish, you know, lifestyle. But it's not true. It's not what we're really experiencing. And it's unfortunately interfering with really meaningful relationships with ourselves and with other people.
I don't like it. I mean, as much as I need to be on it as a personality and a celebrity, I don't like the idea of constantly having to put your life out there.
I want to admit that I don't like it too, because I don't think we admit it enough. I think a lot of people dislike social media, but they're afraid to share it. So I'm with you. I agree.
Right. But they'll share going to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, they will.
They'll share their lunch.
They will.
But
and
they won't share
all their feelings.
And their feelings, right? And let people know exactly where they are by pinpointing their location.
Absolutely.
In case you want to come rob me, here I am.
Totally.
Right?
In case you care.
I don't do that, though. I'm not a fan of, like, geolocating. I think that's really dangerous.
Yeah.
We talked about it when that game came up. What was that game that... Dave, you know, we're talking about which one?
Pokemon Go?
The Pokemon Go game. I thought that was insanity.
Terrifying.
Terrifying. How do we get kids unplugged, Neely? How do we do it?
If you can, I mean, it might feel difficult. Honestly, just turn off your phones. Just give that a moment for a second and turn them off. We feel so obligated to be online, but who's keeping us there? I mean, besides all these online engineers that are trying to keep us engaged, but turn off your notifications. And if that seems a little bit too much, put all of your social media into folders in your phone where you have to, like, consciously scroll to find them. Because we're going online aimlessly. We're not even thinking about it, and then scrolling, and then soon 30 minutes go by and there goes your day. And it's really difficult. You can't be present when you're scrolling. I think I'm a very spiritual person. I think basically your body is trying to live in the past and in the future while trying to interpret this information that you're seeing. And there's no way that is authentic joy in
not
this
at
world.
Not at all. I mean, I'm a big fan of Eckhart Tolle and
yes!
The Power of Now.
He is my favorite.
Me too. And it's a tough notion for people to embrace, the idea of being purely present.
Right.
You know, and what that really means.
And it's not thinking. That's right. The thing. And speculation, that's all you're doing online. And Eckhart Tolle, that's all you're learning how to turn off your brain. And being online and engaged in social media doesn't allow your body to do that.
Right. Well, okay. So let's talk about it. So people are like, all right, well, how do you be present? Like what's, so if I'm in the present, if I'm in the moment, like Eckhart Tolle, to be, you know, hyper-focused on that for a second, he says, you know, if you're in the now, yes, truly in the now, mm-hmm, nothing else is real.
Right.
And what's wrong in this moment? He says it constantly throughout his books. What's wrong in this moment now? Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Nothing at all.
But the body, the mind, mm-hmm, instantly wants to go backwards or forwards to say, well, I'm anticipating, I'm anxious about, sure, this in the future, or God, that happened to me in the past and I can't let go of that.
And so, Eckhart Tolle would argue that the future and past do not exist.
They don't.
They don't.
But in reality, they don't.
They don't.
They exist in memory.
Right.
They exist in projections of the future.
Absolutely.
But not now.
And our mind, in this case, and I'm a therapist, so I'm constantly working through this all day, is our minds actually betray us often. Often.
Right.
Because we're constantly judging and, you know, wondering what is best for me, and but what about yesterday? And we are not the pain that we're walking through our life. We're not any of that. But we've somehow been conditioned to,
right,
think that. And when you look at stuff online and it brings up all of the speculation, all you're doing is reliving that pain.
How do we let it go? And I know that we're supposed to be talking about social media, but I think it ties in all together because social media reminds you of moments of the past that may be good or bad. And, you know, so it brings you to that place.
Sure.
So how do we live in the present, truly?
There are so many things you can do with close friends. Get rid of your phones. What I do is I, you know, put them in a fishbowl when you are all together. Put them out of vision and be with each other. And really the basic stuff, breathe, look at each other and be with each other in, right, the very moment. And you just can't with any device. So put it away. And it's okay to be afraid. We're not used to being alone in our stillness. And I recommend meditation all the time. You,
yeah,
have to acquaint,
so do I,
yourself. You,
yeah,
know, you just can't be carried away because really you cannot enjoy the true things, the meaningful things of life when we are just so distracted by these curated moments and comparing ourselves to other people. You will never live your life that way.
Curated moments. That is definitely a key word there because, I mean, if you think that what you're looking at online is real, it, chances are it's not.
And it's, yeah, also important because it's addicting to be creating these scenarios in your mind and to be looking at what people are doing. It is an addicting thought, and Eckhart Tolle talks about that, to stay in these conversations and this dialogue with yourself that aren't real. There's something very addicting about it. And also, it's very addicting to be online and to get notifications because dopamine levels are being elevated in your brain. So,
you mean like somebody likes me, somebody, you
all the notifications, yes.
I got a new follower, likes. I got a new...
Totally.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, they're conditioned stimuli to make us think that we're getting some sort of reward when it's not. When being with real people and in real time is really the ultimate reward.
I agree with you 100%. And I feel like that has been the biggest downfall of, let's just call it the internet.
Sure.
You know, in general, and social media is, you know, an aspect of the internet. I know there's positives to the internet because it's created global business and tech. But at the same time, the what spawned, you know, grew from that is destroyed society on so many levels, in my opinion.
And also this huge sense of denial of ourselves and what we're going through. If I'm, you know, having a really bad day and I put up a very curated picture of myself and get all these likes, that takes a tremendous toll on the psyche. And talk about denial. That's totally pulling you away from stuff that needs attention and care. But you're getting all this reinforcement from everybody outside of you, and it feels like it's rewarding. But really, at the end of the day, you're left alone in the pain that you were left with in the beginning.
I agree. And I've had experts on the flip side speak of, well, it's a good thing. If I'm getting some feeling of positivity by posting a picture and somebody's liking it and it makes me feel a little bit better in that moment, isn't that a good thing?
I have to disagree. I don't.
I agree with you.
I don't, because you have to ask yourself, why are you posting these moments? What for, really? And it's important to familiarize yourself with your online behavior because there are a couple apps I can recommend. One is called Checky, and it actually checks the amount of times you go on your phone. You might actually be mortified.
That's a good one. Wait, so, what is it called? Because everybody should download, yes, this to check themselves.
Yes. Yes, you must. You need to know, because we like to convince ourselves, oh, we're only online an hour a day. Yeah. I guarantee you it's far more than
Checky?
That. Checky. It tallies the amount of time you go on your phone. Another one is called Moment, where it tallies the hours that you're on, and it compares it throughout the week. And another is called Freedom, and it actually allows you to block access any social media that you want to for a number of hours if you program it.
Brilliant.
That way. Yes.
So how do they operate with the social media apps?
So let's say I realize after familiarizing myself with my behavior, let's say I go online late at night, it keeps me up, it's really stirring for me, and I realize I need to be offline from 9 p.m. Let's make it 8 p.m. 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Freedom will allow you to put that in, to compute it, and it will block you from going on Facebook, from going on Instagram, Snap, anything that you want. So you can't. And you can find your body trying to get online, but it won't allow you.
You get that panic feeling, yes, and the anxiety that comes along with it.
Absolutely.
Then, like, how much is habit of just taking your thumb and scrolling through, you know, a timeline constantly, yeah, all day, unconsciously sometimes, just doing this?
You will be terrified to see how long you're on your phone. Really. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I thought I was on my phone for only an hour. And then after using this a couple days in a row, I was like, wow, things have
changed. Has it helped you slow down a little?
Oh, absolutely. I love talking about this topic so much because even...
So do I. I could go on for an hour about this. Dave, we're going to have to book Neely again.
There's an Eckhart Tolle anytime.
Well, no, I want to do that for real, Dave. We're going to bring Neely back. We're going to spend a good hour talking about being present. So I think it's worth an hour conversation.
Absolutely.
But what I was trying to get at is the idea that our lives are being lived online.
Right.
But for somebody like who's a celebrity or personality, and now... Unfortunately, here's another avenue where corporations have invaded our lives to demand somebody be online, because right, nobodies are becoming somebodies because they post 1,000 pictures of half-naked selfies,
right,
and now companies want to pay them to put on beauty products to continue to do that, and if not more. So now you got corporations involving themselves in personal lives of everyday people, making them quasi-influencers. Right. And now what? Now they got to be on their phone for 10 hours. They got, you know, like they're being paid. That's your job now.
Well, there's certain software engineers, their algorithms that they're running, they want us to be engaged. So they'll withhold the notifications, right, that make us feel good, the likes and the friend requests. They'll withhold those from you. They'll hide them to keep you engaged online. I mean, really, we are losing a serious sense of independence and self when it comes. There's a reason why we're so addicted to it. And we have to understand that this goes beyond just right now. Sometimes it feels willpower itself.
It really does. I mean, it's like crack, unfortunately, yeah. For a lot of people. I've, you know, constantly, all you see is kids. You know, you can do it right now. If you look outside this window.
I see one.
You know, typically it's every single other person, four, five, looking down on their phone,
six,
not paying attention, seven,
look
eight.
Across the street too.
It's happening. They're on their phones constantly, walking like zombies.
See, look, this woman is waving because she's looking at
us. She's engaging. Hi, we love
you.
You're with us. You're present.
We're with you. Oh, thumbs up. See, but that's a real life thumbs up.
That's a generation, though.
Yes,
that's a different generation.
It is.
Now you look at the younger generation, and you know they're looking on their phones, looking down. They're zombies.
Yes.
But anyway, we could keep talking about this forever.
Forever.
And you're going to come back and talk about it. Yeah, that's Neely
Bedden.
She's a clinical psychologist at North Shore University, a great place. We went there for my wife, Dr. Mendoza. Shout out to Dr. Mendoza. Great stuff. Where can people find information about North Shore and yourself?
Oh, visit our website, NorthShoreUniversityHealthSystem.com, and we have tons of providers who are here for you. If this is getting you down, you are not alone. You and so many other people on the couch are waiting for us to help you and walk you through this, and we're just willing to be here for,
because this is a thing, folks. This is a real thing. People are hurting from this.
Yes,
and we got to fix them.
Thank you so much.
Right now we're talking amazing food from the Wit. This is Chef Nathan Sears is joining me rooftop at the Wit. What's up, Nathan? How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I got caught mid-sentence with some lamb in my mouth, and it was fantastic.
They'll catch you.
It's choking me now, but tell me about it.
So basically what we did was with Roof, we started off, we wanted to really just kind of like lighten up the menu. So we kind of took a hint from southern Spain, and we went the Moorish route. So we get a lot of really nice dynamic flavors with all the influences of Spain, which is late night eating, a lot of partying, things like
that. Small portions though, right?
A little bit smaller, but usually it's more about going out with a ton of friends, not always a couple little bites, but you know, the plates are definitely smaller and more to be shared.
Yeah.
So what we did was we kind of went through and we got all the stuff going, and we really just want to like lighten it up because people are there, they're dancing, they're having a good time, they're eating late. You definitely don't want something heavy. So we're kind of limiting a lot of the meatier options and the heavier options and lightening stuff up with portion control, like you said, and as well as just overall flavors and freshness. So,
the quality of food. I mean, that lamb tastes fantastic. What did you bring it for us today?
So today I have the braised shredded lamb, which is Catalpa Grove, which is a great lamb that a lot of the great chefs in the city use. It's kind of like a gyro, basically. So we make our own flatbread, and we have a hearth oven in the middle of the kitchen or in the middle of the dining room. We roast tomatoes, cucumbers, carrots. We make a tzatziki in-house, as well as roasted garlic tahini. So you kind of like build your own little pita. We have a pea bisaro, which is it's from Northern African spread. So it's traditionally done with fava beans, but we do it with local peas. We do it with a lot of herbs, some spices, candy walnuts, and pickled ramps because everybody in Chicago loves ramps.
And is that a dip, like a side?
Yeah, it's like a little dip that you can get, and we serve the flatbread with it. We have the flatbread here, but we usually serve it with like a toast point or a crostini. And then we have the roasted baby carrots or spring carrot salad with pickled green almonds, which are a great thing to use in the spring, a charged scallion relish, a little bit of herbs. So, you know, really heavy use on herbs and spices and stuff in the food.
So how does your menu come together? I mean, are you solely in charge? Or do you do a tasting for everybody, weigh in on like what's going to actually make it to the menu?
Generally, what I do is I sit down and I kind of think of the overall concept, and then I kind of jot down a bunch of dishes. I'll sit at my breakfast table drinking coffee and have like 12 cookbooks out, and I just kind of go through them and look for inspiration, write down the ones that I really like or other dishes that have inspired me throughout the time of kind of just eating around and being a chef. And then I start to write down flavor profiles I want to hit. And so it's like this huge process that starts off with something that's probably like, you know, 30, 40 dishes, and then we trimmed it down to 18.
And you literally making all 30 or 40 dishes to try it? Or
in my head.
In your head,
right. You know, one of the things is as a chef, as you start to do things, you start to almost visualize the flavors that happen. So, you know, you kind of know, like, if you do this with that, how it's going to taste. And then, so we kind of go through that, and then once it hits the menu, like, we change the menu, I want to say early April, I've already changed half the menu. Just because of inspiration, the seasons, when it's warm outside, you walk upstairs. Like, we had this really nice roasted chicken dish with fregola. It ate like a really nice chicken noodle soup. But then last week, when the weather was 80 degrees, I'm like, all right, that's done. That's off the menu. No one wants to eat that when it's nice outside. So we changed that up. We changed up an octopus dish. We put a tuna crudo on, all kinds of little things like that. So
as a chef, how much of it is your personal, like, this is what I like and I think people are going to like, versus how much are you designing for the audience, let's call it?
It's difficult to say. I mean, you definitely need some to get the draw, to get the people in. You got to stick with the things that you know you can sell, because it's still a business as much as it is a personal approach. But it's also one of those things where when you get to that point, like at State and Lake, we have a really good burger, we have a steak, and then and a salmon. And when you do end up having those dishes, then it's like, okay, well, if you get the salmon, like, people who order salmon are going to order salmon no matter where it comes from, unless it's like totally off the wall. So we kind of keep it low key. We keep the salmon, and then we put our spin and our personality into the dish itself. Creating a whole new menu like State and Lake, or I'm sorry, like Roof, it's one of those things where you put it out there, see what sells, and constantly adjust until you find the formula for the clientele for Roof, because it already has 8 years built in.
Sure.
So you definitely got to work with the people that are already coming.
Great environment, great spot, great food. Chef, what is your favorite dish on the menu?
On the menu at Roof?
Yeah.
I would say right now it's probably the octopus we just put on. So again, we have the nice oven. We sous vide some octopus. We cut it in nice chunks. We sear it up.
Small, or you like leave the full tentacle?
Like 1-inch chunks. So it's, again, that's one of those things going with the share environment. Like, we had a lot of feedback. Like, people didn't like cutting up the big tentacle because it was a dish we had on. So we chop it up. We roast cabbages that I got from my buddy Dan Sauls at Coyote in Logan Square. His, you know, cabbage dish was great. So we roast it fully in the oven. We break it up. We have a tomato.
A little crunchy,
but just like that good, soulful roasted cabbage flavor. And we toss it with the Espelette vinaigrette. So you get a little bit of mustard. We add some herbs de Provence. So we get a nice floral note to it with the cabbage. And then it goes on top of a tomato and tamarind jam that we make in-house. So you get sweet, sour, spice, earthy, you know, some umami going on. That's probably my favorite right now.
So where did you get your chops from? Where did you get your cooking chops
from? I spent a lot of time out at V, out in the Western Burbs. I worked with Paul Varon for 8 years.
Springs, right?
Yep. So that man definitely taught me a lot of what I know. And outside of that, I worked and owned Rather for a little bit up in Logan Square. Loved being up there. And then, you know, through the natural progression of a career, sometimes things need to change, and that's what happened. And then I found myself at the Wit. So.
Right, and you get tapped by a great organization like these guys.
Exactly.
And now you're an executive chef over there, which is fantastic. I mean, your responsibility is not just the Wit. You're dealing with lots over there, right?
Yeah, so I oversee the Roof, I oversee State and Lake, and I oversee banquets as well. So all the food program there is all me. So
good stuff. Big responsibility, man. Mm-hmm. But you're filling the boots well, let me just say.
Well, I got a good buddy, Kevin McMullen, that helps me every day, and he helps oversee that so I can do more of the business side of it with the job. So it's
good stuff, man. Thank you so much for bringing these samplers. I'm not done. Don't leave with those yet. Chef Nathan Sears, Rooftop on the Wit. Where can people find out more information about it?
You can go online. You can go State and Lake, roofonthewit.com, stateandlake.com, wit.com.